Do you mind? We're playing through. Here's Froggy and Whacker.
It's another edition of the Playing Through podcast. Thank you so much for listening. It's Froggy from Elvis Duran in the Morning Show at Froggy Radio on Twitter and Instagram. Here with Brian Whacker at Brian Whacker 1 from Golf Digest. Brian, PGA Championship was a pretty damn good tournament.
Final major of the year, and boy, that was a pretty good way to go out.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Leading into it, and yeah. I know you had talked about this with Rich Beam. And
There was no buzz. There was no buzz. There's no. Look, maybe us in the media, we're all contrarian a little too much sometimes.
Hold on a second. Yeah. Let's go backwards. There was crazy buzz around the Masters. There was a lot of buzz around the U.S. Open. There's always buzz around the Open Championship.
Well, and look, we just come off. You mentioned the Open Championship. This great month of Lynx golf between Carnoustie, of course, in the Open Championship. The Senior Open at St. Andrews, Gullin with the Scottish Open, the ladies. So there had been so much good golf on so many good golf courses for about a month. And then we go to St. Louis and we'll get into this. Look, St. Louis is a terrific sports town. Those fans were fantastic all week long. They really were extremely they were into it. They showed up, and they were extremely friendly, and it's just great atmosphere from that standpoint. But there's definitely a lot of sort of there wasn't a lot of excitement over Belrive Country Club, rightfully so. Look, the tournament delivered on Sunday for sure, and that was one of the more memorable days. And it really looks, Brooks Koepka was fantastic all week, but really there's one guy there's a couple of guys, but one guy above all that really sort of won the week.
It's my boy.
Yeah, I knew you. Look at that big smile. If only we had a camera here. Maybe I should take a picture. The smile on your face.
What it is I had accepted that this we weren't going to see this anymore. A year ago, I thought, you know what?
I think everybody had. Yeah.
I just wanted to see him play again. I didn't even care where he finished. And then when he started the year at the Hero. And it wasn't great. And then, you know, he missed the cut at Genesis. I know he played okay at Torrey Pines. I mean, it really was. And I was trying to lower my own expectations. And then we had Valspar. Honda, he played decent. Valspar, second place finish. In order to not win, it took Paul Casey to have the greatest putting day of his career. So there was some buzz there. A little bit of a letdown at Bay Hill. The Masters was not as great as we thought it was going to be. So we have been kind of up and down. But to see what we witnessed, to me, I know he didn't win. I know it was second place. But to me, what we saw for 4 days in St. Louis at Belrive is the best we've seen from Tiger Woods yet, because he did not fade on Sunday. He didn't fade on the back nine like we saw a little bit at Carnoustie. It seems to get a little better every single week. I feel like he's going to get over the hump. Well, now, and you've been one that said he wouldn't win a major this year. I'm going to give credit where credit's due. You're right. He didn't. He was better than we thought he'd be at the majors this year. Agree? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people would have pointed to Augusta as a place he would do well. He was pretty pedestrian there.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Open Championship, and going into it, given the setup, a lot of people, Brandel Chamblee, a good friend of the program here, and a number of others, self-included, thought he could do well because he wouldn't need to hit a lot of drivers there, and he did. He delivered. But down the stretch there, we saw some, those last four holes, which are, look, some of the hardest holes in golf. And we'll get into this, the venue with Belrive, because this was not a sort of a championship venue, certainly compared to the other three courses we saw in the major championships this year. And I think that maybe influences our thinking, obviously. But to me, you go back to, and we talk about this, obviously, too, Tiger with, not making birdie on 17, not even making birdie on 17 when he had a chance at eagle on 17 on Saturday. To me, there's still a little bit of that hump to get over, but this felt like if it were not Brooks Koepka in the lead, looking the way he looked all week and looking the way he did on Sunday, quite frankly, this might have been a different result for Tiger. But certainly, I don't think at the start of the year, you would have been hard-pressed to find you, even the most ardent of Tiger fan supporters, to say that he would have contended legitimately deep into Sunday in two major championships this year, either of which could have gone his way.
Right. And neither one was one that we really picked. Most people were saying the Masters was his best chance because he loves Augusta. He plays so well there. So to see him do it really was phenomenal. There's two things I want to say real quick, though. Number one, I want to give your colleague, Alex Myers, there at Golf Digest. He wrote an article, The Seven Shots That Cost Tiger His 15th Major. Mm. And you can go back, and whether it's one, it's that double bogey on 11 is his second hole of the tournament on Thursday.
Yeah, the three over start. It was not.
Yeah, I mean that hurt him.
Great.
The putt that I still can't believe that putt on Sunday on 11 at seven at number 11 didn't fall in. That cost him the par putt that he just slipped out. There's really a lot of shots you can go back and say. And listen, I'm sure Brooks had his share of shots that could have gone either way as well. I know what happens over a 72-hole tournament.
Well, and the tee shot on 17 on Sunday, of course, we'll get into that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things.
We've seen, and this is and Tiger said as much after his round. I mean, the driver is still a problem.
Where, it is.
Where, you know, you had Brooks. The fascinating to me about this was,
I don't want to come off as we're not giving Brooks credit. Brooks absolutely overpowered the field, pounded his driver like Tiger said. He said, look, the guy's hitting at 340 down the middle of the fairway. That's tough to beat. Brooks absolutely, positively won this golf tournament. And he went out and overpowered it and deserved every ounce of it.
And that was the thing. Brooks, you know, look, he wasn't going to back off driver, and he said as much really all week. He was sort of surprised to see some guys, you know, hitting long irons or three woods. He really felt like, look, I'm just going to hit driver because there's not going to be any run out in the fairway. So even if you're a little bit off in your driver, you know, these were not the widest fairways, but they weren't the tightest either.
But the rough was thick.
The rough was thick, but look, there was just no fear in terms of Brooks with how he was driving the ball, which, by the way, showed up at Belrive with a crack in his driver.
Yeah.
And then they had a test about maybe half a dozen, I think it was, his coach, Claude Harmon, told me. Eventually settled on one, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday, and was fine. And you know, look, you hear this, that happens more than you think, but the fact that he went out then and drove it as well as he did, you know, tells me that there was really no concern over the driver for him. It's a huge advantage. Obviously, if you can hit the ball in the fairway, and we saw that with Tiger, he's still struggling off the tee. Look, there were times he hit irons into the rough.
On Sunday, his front nine, he hit three irons off the tees. He did not hit one single fairway and still shot three under on Sunday. I mean, he said his warm-up was horrible. He said he was hitting it both ways. He didn't know where the ball was going.
Right.
But he hung in there and still shot three under. To me, that's a different Tiger Woods. That takes us back to the Tiger we used to see.
Yeah, this felt like that version. Maybe not quite the same version because I point to shots on 17 or you point to the putt on 11 not dropping. You point to the bogey on 14. But this was as close to that version, certainly, as we have seen really in a long time. Even maybe better than, I mean, look, he won five times in 2013. This was the closest.
But didn't have a second place at a major that year.
Right. Yeah. This was the closest version to the old Tiger that I've seen. And it was absolutely fabulous to watch.
And
of course, obviously, we saw that in the ratings. People tuned in. Record numbers there.
Up 69% from last year.
Huge crowds. That was scintillating stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, the problem was more Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka as it was, you know, Tiger not hitting driver well throughout the week.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Tiger crumbled, or I wouldn't even say there was a choke in this one. There was some talk of it being a choke at Carnoustie because as Brandel Chambly said, a choke means that the pressure that you're under has affected what you've done, and that's exactly what happened at Carnoustie. I wouldn't say this was a choke.
No.
Even the drive on 17, not a choke. That's what he's been doing. He's been blowing it both ways. The fact that he saved par, then goes to 18 and rolls in birdie, that is a different Tiger Woods, and that's Great finish. So for the year, we got 14 starts. We have 12 cuts made, 8 top 12s, 4 top 5s, and 2 runner-up finishes. He has twice as many top 5s as he does missed cuts. So to me, and I know we still have the playoffs to go, he's looks like right now he's 20th in FedEx Cup points. He'll play all 4 events. He could feasibly win one of these FedEx Cup events. I mean, with it's not a stretch now to think that whenever he tees it up, he's got a chance to win.
Yeah, no, I think at this point, again, there's still some holes or some, you know.
Oh, the driver is an issue.
Sure, the driver's an issue. You know, at times when he gets in these moments, when he gets to that point of having the pressure on him, needing to pull off the shot or needing to execute the putt, we still have not seen him get over the hump,
right,
in that regard.
But he has fixed his putting. His putting's better. It wasn't great on Saturday. It was much better on Sunday. And so his putting is up and down. But it's not as bad as it was at, let's say, Memorial when he didn't make anything. So his putting has gotten better.
He's certainly – look, I've maintained this now for – and I get all sorts of flack from, you know, my colleagues in the office. But I sort of said, look, he's a very good tour player at this point. And that's –
He's a little better than a very good tour player.
And at this point, right, he's sort of the upper echelon of that very good tour player to me because he still hasn't won. And look, at the end of the day, it's about winning.
Right.
And to me, that's, you know, look, the comeback is not complete, I'm sorry, until he wins because that's the bar he's set, and but that's what we've all measured him by.
Did you ever think you'd see him excited as he was and as pleased as he was to finish second in a major?
No, but... look, career round there, his lowest final round in a major, 64. Had a shot at 63. Could, you know,
lowest score to ever not win a major.
Lowest score to ever not win a major. So,
and the lowest score on the weekend in PGA Championship history.
Right.
I mean, he really played total, very well on the weekend. The first two holes on Thursday were really his undoing. It's crazy how. A putt on the first hole on Thursday is just as important as the 17th hole on Sunday.
Yeah,
it all goes in together. It's not match play. It's total score. So that's really when you can go back and look at and like I said, I read Alex Meyer's article at Golf Digest where he mentions the 7 shots, and there are so many of those you could go back and say, well, what if? But to see how happy he was to finish second place, I think he appreciates being there because. It was almost all taken away from him when he couldn't get out of bed for months. I do believe we're seeing a different Tiger. Let me ask you this. Do you think we will get a victory from him in the FedEx Cup playoffs?
No.
You don't? And why is that?
Well, look, I've maintained the position all year that he doesn't win. He's certainly capable of it, but you know, I just look at the venues. Okay, Ridgewood could be problematic with the driver there. TPC Boston... could be problematic with the driver there.
These are narrow courses?
I mean, you know, sort of classic tree lined.
You can't spray it.
Yeah, you can't just blow it all over the place on those two, either of those two tracks.
And can he hit irons off tees? Or is it too long?
Sometimes, you know, there'll be cases, I think, where we see that. But again, you're going to, the thing I still haven't seen is him, you know, just getting over that hump. And this was, you know, I think he went into Sunday feeling like, okay, I even Saturday night conceded he needed a low one because I think certainly he could sense
that Brooks wasn't coming back.
Brooks wasn't going to come back. The golf course really wasn't going to let that many people come back because, you know, it just wasn't that difficult,
right,
really. Par there felt like, I don't know, 68 and a half almost.
Right.
So, and it was par 70 course, so it didn't feel that difficult. So to me, and it clearly wasn't in terms of the scoring, you look at the numbers that were put up all week, a couple of 63s, the lowest total in PGA history. You know, that said, I just feel like, okay, look, if he were to win during the playoffs, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, he certainly could win at any of those venues.
At this point, if he's in the field and tees it up, he's got a chance to win.
Yeah, and look, and the farther you get into the playoffs, or the further you get into it, obviously there's fewer players you have to worry about.
Right.
So
And his proximity to the hole is really getting good.
Yeah, I mean, his iron play has been really good this year.
Was it 15 on Sunday? I mean, from 164, he hit a 9-iron to a foot.
I'm just curious to see how, you know, it continues to go when the pressure is on him, when the spotlight is on him.
Well, he had to be feeling pressure on Sunday.
Sure.
He had to be, and I think he performed the only...
He also was trying to chase Brooks down.
He did, which means he had to do some things that he didn't want to do.
Sure.
But he had hit driver on 17 every day.
Look, I think certainly that performance helps him enormously.
Oh,
in
it
that
definitely
area.
Puts some good fibers in the brain and in the thought process of, hey, I can do this again. I've been there. I know what it feels like. I can do it. I think that was very, very valuable to him to feel that way. So you've mentioned the first two venues that are probably not the best for driving the golf ball. Now, what about the last two?
Well, then we go to the BMW Championship in Aronimink, which first year there for the event, but his tournament was there a couple of years back in 10 and 11.
And he won there, I think.
Because Congressional was being prepared for the U.S. Open.
Right. Didn't he win there?
You know, that's...
I thought he did. I thought he had won there or played very well. I know in 13 he won his tournament, but I think by then it was back at Congressional. And then I know the final event is in Atlanta.
Yeah, East Lake, which of course he's won there before. So, you know, look, he certainly could.
I mean, he's got a chance. Like you said, the first two, probably not the best with driving the golf ball if you can tighten up the driver.
He did not win, by the way, at Aronimink, which sounded confusing to me when you said that. That was Justin Rose in 2010 and Nick Watney. 2011.
Okay. So he won in 13, but by then it was back at Congressional already.
No, the year he won his event, was 2009. And then 2012, he won it.
It was 12. Okay, so 12.
That was back at Congressional. And that was back at Congressional.
Okay.
First year back there.
Yeah. Okay. So he does have it. So maybe the last two events are his best chances. The good thing is he's high enough up in FedEx points right now. He's 20th.
He should make it to East Lake, I would imagine.
Which earlier in the year. See, this is what's funny.
Yeah.
Earlier in the year, if I would said to you, do you think he could win at East Lake? The first answer would have been,
he
probably wouldn't even make East Lake.
Yeah.
Now it's a foregone conclusion that he's number 26 in the world golf rankings. He's up from 1199. Now I know that you have a problem with people like me and everybody else making a huge deal out of the rise from almost 1200 to number 26.
Well, right, because look, the way the world rankings work, and not a lot of people, or you know, I think people in the golf community certainly understand it, but I think the casual fan maybe doesn't necessarily. I know you do, but it's a 2-year sliding scale. So, in other words, the short version of this is if you don't play for 2 years, your ranking is going to go off a cliff because you're going to have no starts.
Right,
so,
and he's not being hurt by the tournaments you don't play.
Right.
You just lose points. Once you start gaining points, those zeros don't hurt you.
Right.
They just don't count as because they don't need to play.
All the good results fall up for him. What happened that, you know, you can go back to 2013 when he won 5 times. So eventually all those wins fall off the chart in the world rankings. And, of course, his... You know,
the only thing he had was like a couple missed cuts.
Yeah, and the only time he did play, he didn't play well. So the numbers just go off the cliff, and of course he plummets. Now, that said, the fact that he has worked his way this quickly back up the leaderboards, the rankings, speaks to how well he has played and how consistent he has been. You mentioned that he's only had 2 missed cuts this year.
Right. Now, to me,
he's been fairly consistent pretty much all year in terms of finishes. So that's been impressive that he's been able to maintain it. We've seen some stretches physically where there's some questions because he played a lot of golf in a short period of time, which we're going to get now with the playoffs, which is another reason I think I'm curious to see, because I feel like
he's going to play 4 weeks in a row, looks like.
Right. Well, you get the break in the playoffs in between this year. You get a week off, a bye week, but you know, this is going to be a lot of golf for him. So I have to think that St. Louis took a lot out of him physically and mentally.
Right, right.
So how quickly can he rebound that?
Oh, he kept saying he was mentally tired.
Sure. So right, 29 holes on Saturday. So, you know, he'll get this week off coming up. It's the final week of the regular season, the Wyndham Championship, which we'll get into. And then he'll go into the playoffs, play the first two, week off, then the Tour Championship, then the Ryder Cup. So, there'll be a couple of breaks in there for him that will be important. And quite frankly, I believe he took Monday off coming off of Bridgestone as well because he was, you know, pretty worn out, took an ice bath, all of that. So how much, what's the cumulative, you know, effect of all of this golf on him? So that's what I'm curious to see, how that plays off, how that plays out in the playoffs and what that means in terms of where he finishes.
But now what I do want to get into is official world golf rankings. I know that it's easy for him to make big gains because he didn't have any results in there.
There's only one way to go, right?
Right. So, but I'm not sure people know this or understand this. If you take just the total official world golf ranking points from just the majors in 2018, where do you think he is? Just the majors. Just take the four majors. You know, he only made the cut in three. So if you just take those four tournaments.
It has to be top 10 easily.
He's number five.
Yeah. So
Brooks is one. Reed is two. Francesco Molinari is three. Those are your winners. Okay. Tommy Fleetwood is fourth. Tiger Woods is fifth. Then Ricky, then Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, Xander Schauffele, and Rory McIlroy round out your top 10. Dustin Johnson not in your top 10 in points gained in
majors.
The
number one player in the world.
Right. Is number 11. Yeah. That's remarkable that he's number five in official world golf ranking points. And just that tells you where he is amongst his peers.
Well, because he finished, you know, in the top five in two of those. So
six technically. He finished sixth at the British.
Right,
finished second, 37th at the Masters, and a miscut at the Open.
So that, you know, obviously any time you can have two strong majors, which you had in these last two majors of the year, you're going to be up there.
Yeah,
so,
that's what, I mean, to me, that's a big stat.
Yeah, you can absolutely.
I mean, the 26 in the
just
world.
Just look at the finishes. No one, I would love to know what the odds would have been if you said Tiger was going to finish in the top six in two majors this year. You probably could have got good at the start of the year.
Really good odds.
You would have gotten paid well. Yeah. Let's give some more love to Brooks Koepka because this guy, it was unbelievable, the performance he's put on.
He overpowered the golf course. He overpowered the field. And it's not just, you know, plenty of guys can hit the ball a long ways. The way his wedge game, the way he putted lights out. I can't tell you how many times I would look up. I was watching it on Twitter, watching on TV, and it would say, Brooks has 10 feet for par. And he just rolled it in like it was a two-footer. He putted amazingly. Brooks Koepka deserved every single bit of winning that trophy. He's now won. And think about this. He won half of our majors this year, and he didn't play the Masters.
Right. And listen to this. So people sort of look at him as Johnny come lately, but I mean, this is really impressive. 2014, tied for fourth at the U.S. Open. 2015, tied for 10th at the Open Championship, tied for 5th at the PGA. 2016, tied for 4th at the PGA Championship. 2017, tied for wins the U.S. Open, ties for 6th at the Open, Open Championship. 2018, of course, doesn't play the Masters, wins the U.S. Open, not really factor at Carnoustie, tying for 39th. Never really finding any kind of rhythm there.
No.
And then, of course, coming back, winning the PGA Championship. This is a guy at 28 years old. He is the prototypical modern, the epitome of the modern-day player. He hits it a mile. He's built like a stack of bricks.
Yeah, he looks like a linebacker.
Yeah,
I mean, he looks like he could have played linebacker at Florida State instead of playing golf.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got a massive, massive chip on his shoulder.
He's won three of his last six majors he participated in. That's unreal.
Yeah, which, he clearly, now, it's a little bit of a straw man act, in my opinion, about the sort of lack of attention, lack of notoriety going into the majors this year. Because to that point, like he'd won one major, which is certainly no small feat. One tour event. He'd won a handful of other events around the world on other tours. But this was a guy who wasn't necessarily a media darling. So, people
doesn't have a ton of sponsorships, right. If you notice. Doesn't have an equipment deal.
Just wasn't a guy who he can be, thoughtful and interesting in his answers at times, but by and large, didn't say a whole lot in press conferences.
No.
And the masses from the media. Now, look, it's on the media as much as it is the player, but it's sort of a two-way street. You need, you hope the guy sort of gives some thought and some answers to your questions. But this is a guy who had a huge chip on his shoulder because he felt like he was every bit as good as Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth,
Dustin Johnson,
on down the list, but was not getting anywhere near the recognition. Now, in fairness, all those guys had better resumes
right.
at this point.
I saw a story that he and Dustin went to the gym on one of
the
days
story
before.
On Saturday. Yeah.
And everybody was bugging Dustin Johnson.
Everybody fawning over Dustin, the number one player in the world.
And nobody said
fiance,
anything to
Pauline
him.
Gretzky. Yeah.
Right.
And nobody even knew who Brooks Koepka was.
Right, exactly.
You know. But look, for Brooks to bring up the fact that nobody requested him after his opening round, you know, defending you, reigning you at two-time U.S. Open champion, shoots one under in the opening round, tied for, I believe, 32nd or 23rd. I can't remember which. But no media requests. Now, look, there's a lot going on that day. There's a lot, you know.
The Tiger effect is still
sure,
there.
Sure, Tiger's playing, all of that, right?
I mean, Tiger started horrible and fought his way back to even par.
Right. So... but, you know, real or imagined, they've used that as motivation.
Right.
He snickers at it every time he doesn't get the attention, but, you know, doesn't, by the way, also doesn't go out of his way to kind of seek it or kind of play the game, however you want to phrase it, in terms of that stuff. So, but you cannot question his golf. He's an absolutely tremendous player. He crushes the ball off the tee, which everyone, notices, but his iron play is absolutely fantastic, and you brought up his putting. His putting was terrific. You felt like, even though he had a couple of bogeys, a couple of putts, you felt like, all right, these are makeable
right.
par putts you should make, and he missed them on Sunday. His wedge play is really good. His distance controls is terrific, and I think that was one of the reasons this place played really perfectly into his hands, because he could just attack it with impunity, with really no fear of, you know, there's really no major trouble out there.
No, the only hole that I think that required a lot of strategy, as you would call it, would be 11. Do you lay up or do you go for it? And he laid up most days.
Yeah, in 17, same thing.
Yeah, Justin Thomas went for it, and it worked out for him. He hit that guy in the head and then got up and down.
And to me, and this brings up an interesting question, because I felt like it was a bit like driving range golf out there. And by that, I meant they're just... wasn't much strategy involved. Look, the weather was what it was, so you had a very soft golf course. Maybe we would have come away feeling much differently if the golf course played differently, but the design of it is not particularly appealing.
Championship-like.
Well, it just, you know, it comes across on TV as sort of bland. It comes across that way in person as sort of bland. There's not a lot of creativity needed to play that golf course. We're also sort of, you know, we're coming off, as we talked about earlier, that stretch of tremendous golf overseas and Lynx right. golf and Gullen and St. Andrews and Carnoustie and on down the line, that, you know, it's definitely felt like a normal sort of tour course. You know, look, again, the fans were fantastic. The atmosphere is terrific, but it felt like just from a golf course perspective, just like another golf course. And, so to me, the question is, does that take away from the excitement that we had on Sunday? Does that diminish, rather, the championship in any capacity?
No.
Or is it all about the finish and how guys play?
It's the leaderboard.
Okay.
It's the leaderboard and the finish. I think if they played at your local crummy Muni, if they had the same leaderboard that we saw on Sunday afternoon in the same way that we had a finish and the what, you know, as everybody's sitting around saying what could have been, I think the golf course pales in comparison to that. Now, I do think there are times that it is important that we do have a good venue, because sometimes you get a place where maybe the venue's not so – where the venue's great and the leaderboard's not so good, and somebody runs away with it, and so at least the
yeah,
golf
to me,
course
that's
kind
what,
of brings it back.
And that's what happened, right? The leaderboard, to me – and that's why I kind of disagree with your point somewhat.
The leaderboard made this golf tournament what it was, not the golf course.
Right, and that's sort of my point, is that when that sort of masked this not being a great venue, but it felt like, quite honestly, we had this conversation early in the week at Belle Reve with some colleagues of mine, where sitting around in the hotel bar having a drink. And just, yeah, that never happens. But having this conversation about the venue and what it would feel like. And a couple of names that came out were Kyle Stanley and Gary Woodland. Kyle Stanley missed the cut, but Gary Woodland obviously was right there going into the weekend.
Into the final round,
into the final round. And so nothing against Gary, but this is a guy who had zero top tens in a major championship prior to going into St. Louis. So, and it was a very sort of, it felt like, okay, hit it, just hit it in the fairway. It's literally straight in front of you. There's sort of only one way to play it. Right. I'm sure you could hit iron or driver off the tee, but there really was just a matter of put it in the fairway, attack the pins, because
wasn't a lot of undulation in the greens, and the greens were huge.
Huge greens, basically four quadrants. You could attack those quadrants for the most part because the greens were soft. As you pointed out, there's not a lot of undulation. So it felt like a normal venue from that standpoint. And to me, that diminished it a little bit. It felt like driving range golf. And look, we were just bailed out by the fact that guys like Tiger Woods, Adam Scott, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, Francesco Molinari played better than everybody else that week. So,
right. So you believe that they need to get more difficult venues, set it up more difficult?
Well, it's not even so much difficulty. I don't have a problem with the scoring. It's just
a better venue.
how you get to those scores. So it just was an uninteresting Reese Jones venue, which we've seen this from before plenty of times from Reese, and it's just not great. And again, we'd come off a tremendous run of courses, from Augusta to Shinnecock to Carnoustie, and then you can throw in some other venues with the seniors being at St. Andrews, as I mentioned, Gullen, and on down the line. So that certainly impacted the feeling, I think, going into it. It just felt like an okay venue. It wasn't a bad venue. It wasn't the setup wasn't awful. We didn't have course issues like we had at the U.S. Open in terms of some of the ridiculous pin placements and green speeds that we saw and setup issues. It just sort of was a diminished, it just wasn't a great venue. It's just not. I'm sorry.
Right.
But the leaderboard saved it. You're right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to me, I agree with you about 75%, but at the same point, I would have loved to see a leaderboard like that, obviously at a place like Carnoustie or a place like Augusta, because those are really historic venues that are special, and this was just not a special venue. It was a special leaderboard and a special finish. The atmosphere was special. What Tiger did was terrific. What Brooks Koepka did was amazing.
Right.
And, this is the final PGA Championship in August.
Right, so we
final
moved to
major
May.
Of the year. Goes to May, goes to Bethpage next year.
Right.
So this was a great way for this to go out, for sure, and it helps the perception of this tournament quite a bit.
Our future venues are, like you just said, Bethpage Black next year in New York in May. Then we go to TPC Harding Park in San Francisco in
2020. Which, by the way, but Bethpage Black in May, that can be dicey. So, of course, this time next year, or 8 months from now, rather, nine months, we're all going to be complaining about how cold it is and how could they have a major championship at Bethpage in May. Of course, all those venues were picked before the move to May was set.
Right.
So
San Francisco in May can be cloudy.
Yeah,
cold.
That can not be great.
So. Then in 2021, we go to South Carolina at Kiawah Island.
Terrific venue.
2022, we go to Trump National in Bedminster, New Jersey.
And it'll be interesting to see if that happens. I've heard grumblings that that may or may not take place. There might be an escape plan there for a variety of reasons, obviously, for starting first and foremost, really reasons A, B, and C with the first word in that sentence you mentioned, Trump. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But for right now, that is the venue.
Which is crazy. I mean, just take the politics out of it.
Well,
just
yeah, but it leads to a hornet's nest of things. And
plus, it's going to be cold. It could be cold in New Jersey.
It could be, right. It also could be cold there, and we could be dealing with some. It will be cold in Rochester, which is on the. You're about to get to that.
Yeah. Then the year after, it's in New York at Oak Hill.
Yeah, which is practically in Canada. So
yep. Then we go to Kentucky in 2024, Pennsylvania in 2027. I mean, it really back to California Olympic Club. Then it goes to we go back to Baltusrol, New Jersey in 2029. And then it's
look,
go to
I would
Hills.
What do you think of this idea? I proposed this to Rich Beam. Of course, we had him on the podcast during the PGA Championship, and we went back and forth about the little Twitter spat we had about the status of the PGA as a major and the venues and some of the winners and so forth. One of the interesting points that came out of that to me was having a rotation. Why not develop, if I'm the PGA of America and I look at what the other major championships are,
right?
The identities, right? The Masters, Augusta National, the end of story.
Right.
The U.S. Open, the sort of toughest test there is,
right?
Mantra. In some of the big sort of classic venues they go to, Shinnecock, and they've been to Marion, and they, you know, you can go on down the list. The Open, oldest championship in golf.
Right, and they're on and they have a rotation. Right.
Which, by the way, they're breaking from next year with a one-off at Portrush, which will be maybe the second best course behind St. Andrews in that rotation.
Right.
Really a fantastic venue, and I'm excited for that one. So then you get to the PGA.
And what would you do, a 10-course rotation?
Yeah, like I think I proposed the idea with Rich, who agreed, something we could agree on. We finally did agree on something. Why not come up with a rotation around the country of, say, 8 golf courses that are really, really strong venues, classic venues, you know, classic championship venues, places that can hold a major championship, both from a golf standpoint and from an infrastructure standpoint, because let's be honest, that's what these things are about. You can't go to Riviera, for example, unfortunately, for a major, because the infrastructure is just too difficult to make it work, which is a shame, because like that would be a great venue for the PGA of America to snatch up as part of the rotation. And but that's not going to happen. And anyway, and the USGA obviously has some of these courses in its grasp as well.
Right.
Bethpage used to be one of those. Now that moves over to the PGA side of things, holding Ryder Cup and holding PGA Championship. But pick 8 great golf courses scattered around the country, so you hit all the regions, and then pick however many years, maybe once every 5 years, 8 years, however you want to do it. The other two are sort of one-offs. So that way you can maybe go to a newer golf course, or you can go to a newer region, or you can go to a different venue that pick your reason.
And just rotate it every 10 years.
But effectively come up with and rotate those two spots. Those are sort of new all the time.
Just one-offs, yeah.
And the other 8, just rotate them, because then you can build some continuity. You can build it'll elevate the event. You can market around those areas and those tournaments and those courses, and when the tournament is coming back there every 8 years. So
Rich like that?
He did. It was about the one thing
we agreed on.
Well, the two things, because we're both Cubs fans. So, we had some fun about that, because I wore my Cubs hat around St. Louis all week.
That went well, I'm sure.
Yeah, that well. It's going well for the Cubs, because we're in first place, and the Cardinals are far from first place. So, but I caught all sorts of grief, as you would imagine, wearing that. But to me, it really didn't matter, because there was only one response, and that was first place. So,
right.
But I would love to see the PGA do that. They've got different motivations, I guess, in terms of what they want to do at their event. But to me, it would be great to build a sort of continuity, and really would elevate the tournament, I believe. I'm curious to see what they get out of this move to May, if it benefits them in any way, really. I guess it does, from the standpoint of, again, their initiatives trying to grow the game. You're going into golf season at a lot of places around the country. So as opposed to sort of being in the middle of golf season or trailing off in August, with people going back to school or being on vacation still or coming back from vacation, where it's May, it's sort of everyone's getting excited, going to their golf club, starting to play again, all of those things, which speak to the PGA and the PGA professionals. So, from a television standpoint, should be okay. You'll have, I guess, NBA playoffs and that sort of stuff going on, but
right.
You won't really be competing quite as much. and it's second in line, so it comes off the Masters, and it's in between the Masters and the U.S. Open. But, I would just love to see them, from a venue standpoint, go to some better places. Nothing against the fine people of St. Louis. They were absolutely fantastic.
I'm excited for next year's.
Oh, Bethpage. That'll be terrific. You'll have huge crowds there, but you could get some dicey weather, so we'll see how that works out. But, here we are, end of the major season, and now nearing the end of the regular season, this week's Wyndham Championship.
Yeah, but real quick, I also want to mention it was good to see Adam Scott.
It was good to see Adam Scott
contend again in a major, and I hate the way he finished. I hated to see him miss that little. I think if he makes that birdie putt, I don't think anything would have changed the outcome. But I think if he makes that birdie on 17, it makes it a little more pressure on Brooks standing up there on 18 instead of a 2-shot lead. He's got a 1-shot lead.
Certainly,
and I know that Adam was playing with a heavy heart this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Close friend of Jared Lyle, and of course Lyle. Had passed away from his long bout, third bout with leukemia. And, a lot of heavy hearts for the Aussies. Not just the Aussies, but Jared touched a lot of people.
It seems like every single person who ever had any contact with him just said he was a genuinely wonderful man.
He really was. Just a terrific, terrific person. 36 years old, far too soon. Insidious, horrendous disease. I hope we find a cure for it. At some point, but it was really tough on a lot of people, and it weighed on a lot of people, people in the media, players, caddies, as you mentioned. He was a terrific, just human being. And Adam had, as a lot of people did, wore a ribbon on his hat, as most people, all the Aussies did, and a lot of folks around the golf course did. We'll see some of those hats this week. I think at Wyndham we'll see some yellow hats.
They said that Titleist was shipping a ton of those.
That's great.
Yellow hats that he had made famous.
Yeah.
A lot of guys are going to wear those this week. And I know that some of the other brands, if you're not a Titleist guy, say you're a Nike guy or an Adidas guy, whatever, they are also going to be wearing some yellow hats.
Which is terrific. And you mentioned Adam, and this is the first time we've seen him really contend in a major championship in a while. And it just comes down to the putting again with Adam. And you mentioned if he could have.
Now, he carried two putters in the bag, but he never used the other one.
Well, so the reason he did that was the second one was really as if he wanted to use it, the short one, if his ball was ever sort of up against a collar or up against the rim of the green. I guess he felt better in terms of being able to get to the ball with that one as opposed to the broomstick, which. Obviously, would have to sort of have to sweep through a little bit more grass. Maybe he felt just better using that. Never ended up using it, in fact. And
Took a wedge out of the bag to be able to carry a second putter.
Took a wedge out. So really, I don't think there was any significant impact on the decision to do so. It didn't seem to impact any decision making in his play. But really, it comes down to that putt on 17, not making birdie there.
And then the drive on 18 was bad.
By that point, I had to think that missing that putt on 17 was the golf tournament. He knew it. And then 17, poor drive there. Because you're right, it would have been, to me, would have been, that was really the only thing we did not get was Adam. If he makes birdie there and Brooks goes to 18 with a 1-shot lead.
It's a little bit different.
That's a much different ball game. And 18 is certainly a birdieable hole. And that would have been fascinating to see. Adam played very similarly this week to the way he did when he won the 2013 Masters.
Hung around,
made some birdies when he needed to, was there in the end. It worked out for him at Augusta that year. He made some putts coming down the stretch. Of course, made the putt in the playoff to win. Didn't work out this time with the putt, which was too bad. But all credit to Brooks for really just a dominant, fantastic week. It felt like, even though he only won by 2 shots, it never, to me, I don't know about you, never felt like he was going to lose that golf tournament.
When he was tied with Adam for that short amount of time, I think it was for one hole. Because he made his 2 bogeys, then he then made 3 birdies, I think, 2 holes later. It still felt like it was Brooks' tournament to lose. It still felt like Brooks was going to perform. and come away with the Wanamaker. So you said Wyndham Championship this week, last chance to get into the playoffs. FedEx Cup playoffs. Yep. I think the biggest name that we're looking at this week is Sergio. He's outside the 125 now and trying to play his way into the FedEx Cup playoffs. So he'll need probably a top 10 finish to get in, correct?
You know, I'm not sure of the math. It's probably not quite that high, but the more interesting thing to me with respect to Sergio in that being in that position is that this is a guy who's on the outside looking in for the Ryder Cup.
Oh.
So I say that from a literal standpoint. Thomas Bjorn may already have him. And in fact, he addressed the Sergio question earlier in the week at the PGA Championship when he met with the media. And you got the sense that, look, Thomas is always a terrific politician behind on the microphone, but one of the most well-respected players in the game and certainly on the European side as well. So you got the sense that he'd probably pick Sergio regardless. But I think if Sergio were to miss the cut this week, which looking at his year, I mean, 17 starts, worldwide starts, 7 missed cuts. Wow. Of course, he has a win. He won it. He has.
How
one,
much of this do you put
he
on
has
that
one win in Singapore?
How much of this do you put on the equipment change?
That's a good question.
Never played TaylorMade for years and years and years and years, and then this year has made the switch to Callaway because they paid him a boatload of money. But
look, this year, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, 7 missed cuts. He has literally he has not had a year this bad since 2003. When he missed 9 cuts in 26 worldwide starts, which, by the way, he could still surpass that because he's got more starts to come both here and on the European Tour in the rest of the year. So
there's got to be something in the equipment change there.
Just not good. It's not good. He's not playing well. He's missed 3 of his last 4 cuts. He, of course, at the PGA, he missed
He won the Masters a year ago.
Yeah.
A year ago.
And he played well last year. Right. It's not like he hasn't played well since the Masters. Last year, he won 2 other tournaments.
Right. It's not a steady decline. It literally has happened
this year. And we see this a lot. Look,
it's equipment change.
Well, yeah. And we see this a lot. Guys switch equipment and it happens. And, you know, look, I'm not going to start throwing barbs at equipment companies here. He goes from TaylorMade, a friend of the program, but to Callaway. And, you know, it just happens. We've seen it with Rory McIlroy.
Right,
we've seen
which it, I want to get into Rory McIlroy as well, too,
so,
before we go.
So he, you know.
Yeah, made Rory made 3 changes. If you remember
multiple
going from,
equipment switches.
Titleist to Nike was really rough on him.
And it took some time to get used to. So these guys, it sometimes takes time to get used to stuff and to get things nailed in because for Sergio to have this kind of year is pretty shocking.
Right, which is also crazy that Tiger has been able to. Remember, he switched irons during the year. He started off this year with Nike irons, and then now he's playing these proto Woods or proto TW irons that that they've manufactured for him at TaylorMade. And he really hasn't seemed to miss a beat, which just goes to show you again how amazingly talented Tiger is, and he's able to switch in the he switched at some point in the middle of the year and has never missed a beat. Yeah. And that's really shocking. But Rory McIlroy, I saw a tweet of yours on Saturday at the PGA.
Yep.
In between rounds, you remember.
Love when tweets get brought up later because it instantly makes me scared. Like oh crap, what did I tweet?
Well, it was Saturday. He finished his Friday round on Saturday, so he finished round 2 after the weather delay. You said you had just seen Rory McIlroy shank a wedge. I then saw a video with like a shot tracer on that wedge he shanked.
Hit the scoreboard, didn't it?
It did. Something's amiss in Rory's game, and it's very, very strange.
Well, I kind of crossed paths with him in the locker room on Sunday after his round, and yeah, I mean, look, you just get the sense that he feels like he knows he's not playing well, doesn't feel good about his game really in any facet.
Well, he said now that he's considering skipping the first playoff event to either take some time off or work on his game. He didn't know what he needed to do.
Well, I think he looks at it twofold. I think big picture, the Ryder Cup, right? That's the last event in this run of tournaments for him. It'll be...
Is he qualified for Ryder Cup
Now? He'll be on the Ryder Cup team. So he will be on the team. He'll qualify for the team. But it comes... you know, I think it's like 6 starts in 8 weeks or something like that for Rory. So it's a busy part of the schedule for a lot of guys.
He seems to lose focus when he plays a whole lot in a short amount of time. It's almost like he's just not mentally into it.
And not playing well, mind you, in those periods. So, look, his game is built around his driving, but the irons have not been great at times this year. His wedge play at times has just been horrific. He'd be the first to admit it. And, of course, his putting, he's always been a streaky putter. So, and it hasn't really been streaky good. It was streaky good at Bay Hill. Right, that was sort of the 1 week where it's worked, but you're not going to win a lot of tournaments. He's had a very consistent year. He said something interesting to me, or rather to the media, in his press conference early in the week, that he would rather have a consistent year where he doesn't miss a lot of cuts, in other words, but maybe, you know, doesn't win, versus a year where he just misses a bunch of cuts and maybe wins a major. So to me, that's an interesting way to look at it, because at the end of the day, it's about winning. But look, obviously, you can't give yourself a chance to win if you're missing cuts. I don't know. I've just got a different philosophy. I'd rather give me the win. If you can win a major for every year for 10 years, I don't really care how many cuts I miss.
Right.
Now,
I agree.
Now, look, you're not going to miss 10 cuts in a year and win a major. It just doesn't work that way. But
now, former Ryder Cup captain Paul McGinley.
Yeah, this is also interesting.
He has spoken out this morning, actually, and he says that...
Not the first time, by the way.
He feels that Rory McIlroy is extremely average. He says that... a couple quotes here. Look at Dustin Johnson with his wedges, Brooks Koepka with his putter, and Justin Thomas the same. These guys are fabulous, absolutely fabulous. Rory's only average. Sometimes the putting is good, but the wedge play is not great. Then the wedge play is not so bad, but then the putting's off. The scoring clubs are absolutely paramount for a start, he said. The other thing is that his perception is that Rory plays his best and he wins. He says that's no longer the case. That the other three guys, Brooks, Justin, and Dustin, when they play their best, he's not sure that Rory's best is good enough to beat them anymore. And so that, you know,
which is the first time really anybody has said that.
Has questioned Rory, right.
Yeah. In that regard, because usually when Rory's at his best, he's the guy, one of the maybe two guys that gets brought up by his peers, that look, if all else being equal, when everyone's at their best, who's the best of that bunch? And Rory's name is brought up continuously in that conversation. So this is the first time I'm hearing somebody sort of go against that.
Right.
And if you look at his year, that's a fair assessment, because he has not played well. Sure, he won at Bay Hill. But that was a little bit of smoke and mirrors, having, you know, just made everything with the putter.
Everything.
And, you know, it's kind of perplexing. I think Rory's trying to figure, look, it's not the gym. He said he hasn't been in the gym in 3 months.
Right.
So he's clearly been working hard on his game. But it's not working at the moment. And we see this where guys fall into these patterns or these lulls. Jordan Spieth talked about it. Working on the wrong thing for 2 months,
right.
Or what he feels like is the wrong thing for 2 months. He was going down a path with a swing motion technology and approach, working on what he now says was the wrong thing for 2 months. So now you got
to undo that.
Now you got to, not only do you have to undo that, but then you got to work on getting back to where you were. So it's like a double whammy, right? You got to work your way out of what you did for those 2 months, and then you've got to work your way up to where you were.
Right, and then find the fix of what you were looking for in the first place.
Right, so it's a lot.
Which makes me feel much better about my game when I hear these things.
Right, exactly. So Rory just doesn't seem very happy with his game at the moment, knows he's not playing well, sort of can't figure it out for whatever reason is, but all parts of his game he seems not particularly thrilled with.
Yeah, I mean, even his driver, which has been something he's been able to lean on, was not great.
Right.
It hasn't been
great. It's been great at times this year.
Yeah,
but
Bay Hill was fabulous.
Sure, and even at Bridgestone, he had some great drives. But it's got to be just a killer to drive at 350 and then hit a wedge that goes off the green or lands at, we saw at Carnoustie, on the 72nd hole that lands 25 feet from the hole.
Or hit it fat and miss the green.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen too.
I mean, it's all that stuff is going to add up and going to impact you mentally. So this was pretty much a lost year for Rory in terms of his performances.
Now, unless he turns it around in the playoffs, you never know. It's just he's subject to come out one of the playoff events and play like he did at Bay Hill.
And look, if he can go out there and have a great Ryder Cup, win some key matches,
right,
have
still
some points,
makes the year. Yeah,
that will look. If Rory goes out and plays well in the Ryder Cup, helps lead the European team to victory, that will do as much for his game, probably about as much as anything. So, you know, not a great year for him, certainly in the majors. Really, Carnoustie, late charge there. Augusta faded pretty quickly on Sunday there. But, you know, it's mind-boggling to see at times. But I guess that's just golf. I guess we're just spoiled by
it.
You know, Tiger was so great for so long and never really had he had very short down periods. So
we want all the greats
to
perform that way.
We sort of expect the top players, which is unfair because and Ricky Fowler has brought this up on multiple occasions. Fair, and it's a fair point. Look, when Tiger's in that position to win a tournament, you know his winning percentage is 20-30%, or during the prime of his career, he won 30% of his tournaments. And that's just absurd. It's nobody's done anything remotely close to that. So expecting these guys to even do 20% of that or 15% of that is probably too much because Tiger's just that much better. But it is perplexing to see Rory struggle like this after that run he had for three or four years where. It looked like he might win 10 majors now, and he still might, but he looks a long way from getting back to the kind of golf he played a few years ago.
Yeah, so we got Wyndham this week, then we'll start the playoffs. I also want to tell you about something really cool. I know you and I talked about this before. Have you heard about the Under Armour's calls it their Armour Box? Have you heard about this?
I love what companies are doing in terms of these subscription boxes and just the cool... Just a great way because I hate shopping. Hate it. I don't even like shopping online.
No,
like, it's just.
I mean, I'd rather do that than go to the store, but I still don't like that either. So, how it works is it's totally free, available for both men and women. Sends the brands of Under Armour their latest gear to your front door. You can get it every 30 days, every 60 days, or every 90 days. You make that choice. All you do as a stylist there at Under Armour will handpick items that appear in every box, which is customized according to your own style. And your own training needs. So whether you get like an official outfitter, for example, and whether you're playing golf or whether you're going for a run or whether you are just want to simply work out, whatever you're doing, they'll send it to your door whenever you say, and here's how it works. This is the best part of it now. The box arrives with 4 to 6 items, and you have a week to try everything on and decide which ones you like. The best part, you get a 20% discount off of every single thing you decide to buy, and you get free returns for the items that you end up sending back. So it really will cost you nothing. You sign up for it, and then keep what you want, 20% off, which you don't get in any store, 20% off anything Under Armour. And then whatever you don't want, you send it back, and in the next 30, 60, or 90 days, they're going to send you another box. I'm with you. These subscription boxes are super cool. You come home from work, or you come home from wherever you are, and there's a box at the door of clothes. It's like the greatest thing ever. You just try it on and see if it works.
It's like Christmas in August.
Yeah, I mean, it really is really neat. So that's Armour Box. And also want to take a second to congratulate Jaron Ramos on Instagram, at JaronRamos52. Jaron won the M4 driver that we gave away. We did a big entry on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Did a random drawing. And actually, Jaron entered on two of the platforms. And he won, so I'm sure he'll post a picture of it once Taylor gets him out his brand new M4 driver. So we'll be back after the Wyndham. We'll be back to see how that recap goes, and then we will be ready for the FedEx Cup playoffs. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say,
oh, here we go,
that Tiger Woods.
Yeah, that's a real limb, by the way.
Hey, you weren't willing to do it earlier. Tiger Woods will win one event in the FedEx Cup playoffs.
And he just might. He's certainly he's trending in that direction. He's going to win again. The fact that he's at this point as quickly as he is stunning. It's enjoyable. It's great for golf. It's great for Great to see. I mean, it really is. That atmosphere Sunday was incredible.
It was unreal.
I think you've had enough.
Playing through.
Noah? Now you've had enough.
With Froggy and Whacker.
Bitch.